Welcome to In Between Expats, and thank you for listening to the show. My name is Rodrigo Bravo, and let's get started. I start out today by thanking all those who listen to the show, and I must admit that I get excited when I see a new country on my podcast map. This week, it was Senegal, so thank you for listening to the program. Last time, I had Duarte Branco, a Portuguese UN worker who isn't quite ready to return to his home country yet. This week, my guest is Keith Lannon, a native of Dallas, Texas, who was in the Peace Corps in Slovakia, lived in the Czech Republic, and studied in Mexico City. He's been back in the U.S. for a number of years, but as with most expats, there's always a question of reverse culture shock at the beginning. Currently in Phoenix, Arizona, Keith talks about going from volunteer work to jobs in corporations and how he encourages his young son to travel when he's older. Thank you, Keith, for being on the show. And ever since you were very young, it seems like everything pointed to you living overseas. How did your interest in traveling start? Was it because your father was in the Peace Corps in Jamaica?
Yeah, that was part of the reason. But I think that my interest in traveling really started with my grandparents, so my father's parents. My grandfather was a petroleum engineer. And when I was a kid, when he was still alive, he would travel from Missouri to Saudi Arabia every 3 weeks. And as a kid, hearing the stories of, you know, just taking him to the airport, knowing that he's going overseas, coming back, that was, it's like a dream for me to really be able to, you know, hop on a plane frequently and go. But I think that it started with my grandparents' experience, but also with my father when he was being raised by his parents. Of course, they would travel every 2 or 3 years. They'd move to a new location because of my grandfather's position. And then as my dad got older and my grandparents ultimately at one point had moved to Iran, you know, my dad told me the story of flying. He went to Tehran and drove across Iran to visit his parents. I think he was college age. I don't remember exactly when he said it was, but it was like, wow, he could do this. And then later he did join the Peace Corps.
I'm sure they must have been shocked, if not saddened, by what happened in 1979.
Of course they were. Now, I mean, I was a kid. I didn't understand what was happening. I was, 3 years old at the time. But they would mention it occasionally. They did, of course, have a lot of friends, Iranian friends and Afghan friends that would come to visit occasionally. And yes, you know, you could tell there was a difference in, I guess, how they looked at their homeland.
Eventually, you obviously grew up and you went on a trip to Australia as a kid with a program called People to People Student Ambassador. And as a bit of trivia, I saw that President Eisenhower started it. Did you fully appreciate the experience being so young? And will you encourage your young son to take a similar trip when he grows up?
Yeah, so I had that opportunity. I was high school age, so 16, 17 years old. And it was my first trip overseas. You know, hopping on a plane and crossing an ocean. It is a whole different world than here. And again, we were with high school kids, no parents. We had a chaperone. And yes, I enjoyed it. It was, a 3-week trip. And during that trip, you know, we saw the Capitol. We saw the Opera House. We had opportunity to stay with various host families for a couple nights, which that was amazing. You know, I happened to stay with a host family in the outback, and they had a horse ranch where they kept retired racehorses. At least that's what they told me. And wow, you know, I mean, that was my first time to ever hear the word canta and to be on a horse running, essentially. You know, even from Texas, a boy from Texas, I had never had that opportunity. It was a great experience. Now, would I encourage my son to do the same? You know, my son has just by nature of our travel experience, mine and my wife's, he would, you know, he's already traveled overseas with the family. But as an opportunity to gain more independence, I would definitely encourage something like that for him to go without us.
Certainly, it must have encouraged you to travel a lot more as you progressed in life. And eventually you joined the Peace Corps and went to Slovakia. What did you do there, and what expectations did you have about the country prior to undergoing your mission?
Yeah, so joining the Peace Corps, the trip to Australia, it had been 6 years since I had been overseas. And Australia had actually, as my wife says, you know, it makes your butt itch to travel. And so I had to scratch that itch. And, you know, so I started my senior year in college, you know, as every senior starts thinking about their future and what they want to do. I had a winter graduation, but it had always been my dream to, you know, backpack across Europe. But being the winter time, I didn't want to go to Europe in the winter, especially backpacking. Not to mention, I had 4 years of college debt. I had no money, and you know, I didn't want to ask my parents for help in that. So I started thinking, what am I going to do? You know, start my career, find a job, or it's like, hey, my dad was in the Peace Corps, and he loved it, and I mean, it changed his life. And so I started looking into it. Now I could not have done what my dad did. He was a math nerd and was teaching math. Me, on the other hand, I was getting a business degree, and fortunately, Peace Corps had a track called small business development, and it was generally in the more developed nations that Peace Corps participated in or was invited to. And so, you know, looking at the regions, I decided on EMEA. There's most of the countries at that time I didn't know, so I'd asked a colleague of mine, and it's like, well, if you were going to go, where would you go? And he's like, well, you know, knowing that you're from Texas, I would choose Slovakia just because it's a bit further south, and it's right next to Western Europe, you know, borders Austria. When I agreed to go, I truly had zero expectations. That was sort of the beauty of it. And, you know, I didn't know a whole lot. I had spoken to actually one Slovak who is in Dallas. She's an Olympian. You know, of course, I asked all the And now, looking back, it was, you know, a lot of the dumb questions about communism. And I didn't know really, I knew the religion. I knew a bit of the language. I knew sort of the geography. You know, we flew to Vienna, got on a bus to a little town called Stara Tura. And it was like, okay, you know, the Pani Locks, the, you know, the apartment buildings. It's like, okay, this is what I would picture from the images. This is what I had in mind. But on the other hand, people were super nice. The terrain, the, you know, the way things look, the castles, the original older buildings, like, okay, this is awesome. And it's not as populated as Western Europe. So, you know, living there, finally, I moved in with the host family to learn Slovak, and had a 3 month intensive language course. Ultimately went to, my primary site. For me, coming from Texas, I didn't quite like the mountains so much. At least at the time, you know, I like the sea areas, and I got lucky. My host family lived in an area that kind of resembled some of the plains of Texas, you know, but they took me 2-hour car ride to places that looked like Colorado. It was just awesome.
For context, the panel buildings built in former communist countries in the 60s, 70s with cheaper materials, you could hear your neighbors flush the toilet and walk and talk. And I'm sure you experienced that as well. But what did you do? What was your job there?
After the 3 months of my host family, we were assigned to various cities and various groups. Now, in Slovakia, the Peace Corps volunteers were made up of three different areas. You had the environmental, you had your teachers. And then, of course, you had what I was in, which was a small business development. And so I was assigned to an NGO called Občania v Akciji, so Citizens in Action at the time. Občania v Akciji is a community organizing organization. So they're a small group of folks who help organize a larger group of volunteers that come from various neighborhoods. So these volunteers will reach out to Občania v Akciji to help them get organized to fight against a particular action or to make a change in their neighborhood. And they were located in Banska Bystrica. So that's ultimately where I moved. Now, Banska Bystrica is it was a college town. It has, I think, a population of about 80,000 people. It's in the very center of Slovakia. And they've, even in 2000, they had already started updating the old town square. Now, what I did there for Občania v Akciji was helping them with translated documents, the documents that were translated from Slovak into English, and then I kind of nativized it, I guess is what I would say. I, you know, made it into a proper English. I also created their initial website, created a database for all these volunteers, at least the initial ones. This was back in 2000. And so, you know, I really worked with them and from that sort of aspect. I also joined them on various community initiatives, volunteer initiatives. I'd go out to the community as well. Granted, my Slovak wasn't perfect, so I didn't fully understand everything, but, you know, I was able to at least gain that experience. Now, one thing about Peace Corps is that they say, you know, it's the toughest job you'll ever love. And they also say that you actually get more out of it than you can give, which is true. You know, I gained so much from that organization and so much from the country, so much from that city. And again, it's one of those things where the streets are still my second home. I try to go back once a year. I have some of my best friends out there. I have a godson out there. And of course, I met my wife out there.
Obviously, it paid off to go there. Can you give me some kind of idea what Slovaks are like, culturally speaking?
Slovaks are, I guess, what you would stereotype a Central European to be. They are difficult to know at first, but once you know them, they really are a friend or even almost like a family member for life. The way they talk, sometimes it sounds like they're yelling, but they're not. When they converse with you, that they're angry with you, but they're not. They are super nice. If you meet any babka, you know, any grandmother, you will not go away hungry. In fact, you'll gain weight. For an example, my host family, when I first met them, you know, my first breakfast the next morning was 4 fried eggs. And I, you know, unfortunately, my Slovak was very limited. And all I could say was, yeah, no. I, you know, had to finally work my way up to politely saying I can't eat that much. But yes, it's about food. It's about friendship. It's about families. And Slovaks are, in my opinion, some of the nicest people you ever meet.
From a previous conversation, you talked about the reverse cultural shock that you experienced when you went back to the United States in 2002. Can you tell me a little bit about the sensations that you had going back to the homeland?
Right. So I was in Slovakia during 9/11. You know, that had a big impact on me. Some of the other volunteers actually decided to leave early and went back home. I stayed. I didn't experience that sort of kind of emptiness, fear that I think was felt here in the States. Not until COVID anyway. So a year later, which is when I finished with the Peace Corps in 2002, and newly married, we decided to return back to Dallas because that's where my family was from. That's where I'm from. And when we returned, it was a situation where, you know, W. Bush was president. The attitude towards the Middle East was vicious. Pretty much everything that I did not experience, everything that I did not believe in, is the way the sort of, I want to say, typical Texan, especially from Dallas, felt. All my friends that I had known in high school and earlier as a kid, you know, we'd meet up with them. And they were complaining about, you know, about the Middle East. They were saying, yes, we should go to Iraq. Those were against globally at the time. I was with them. I was with the protesters. Well, I didn't protest, but I was with them from a political standpoint. All my friends were, you know, with, I think, with the U.S. government at the time. I did not see why we should go. But, you know, when we debate over, especially over beer, there were, you know, friendly arguments, as there are now. But, you know, it was pretty tough. The other part of it, of the reverse culture shock, was that I had worked so hard to leave Dallas. I had been overseas. I had lived overseas, worked, got married overseas. And I came back to what felt like high school again, what felt like the old ways. And I just could not handle it. I absolutely could not handle it. To compound things, my wife and I, we were newlyweds. We did not have, you know, we didn't have any money. We actually had to move back into my parents' house, stay there for 3 months until we could finally get out. It was difficult finding an actual career, you know, based on my degree, based on my experience in Slovakia. It, you know, just the job market at the time was tough. And so, you know, things were really tough, especially the first year. Finally, we got into it, but I still had that gnawing feeling like, I need to get out. I need to get out of Dallas. I need to get out of Texas. And so ultimately, we found a way out.
Eventually, you had to deal with being back. So what advice would you give expats who have lived abroad as they're settling back?
One thing that did help me was finding the various communities. So there was a Return Peace Corps volunteer group out there in Texas. So I met with them. You know, many of these were volunteers from years ago, from the 60s, 70s. So they had been back for decades by that at that point. But they're still involved. you know, they actually help return volunteers kind of get readjusted. Now, if you obviously weren't part of the Peace Corps, went abroad for another reason, again, finding communities, you know, all of our cities here have, you know, groups of immigrants. Find out who they are, where they are, where they go to church, or, you know, whatever organization or communities that they are involved in. And, you know, try to be with them. Speak the language if you learned it overseas. Get to know them. You got the food. You have the culture. You have everything there. And if you're not able to go back, you know, that's the best way of being sort of in two places at once and helping to readjust back into, I guess, your old life, or at least your new life and your old location.
And you also had to transition from working for the Peace Corps, doing volunteer work, to finance, which is what you studied at school. How do you transition from doing that type of work to a corporate job?
That is no simple task. When you're a volunteer, you have a lot more flexibility. You don't have to think about money and bills. And I did find a position as a financial consultant. And that was the worst. That was the absolute worst for me as well, where I had to go in, you know, it was eight to five or 9 to 5 job. You know, the work, I was sitting in, you know, at a desk in front of a computer dealing with databases and Excel spreadsheets. It was exactly what I did not want to do, but it paid the bills. And, you know, I guess as a company, they worked with the employees and tried to make us feel as good as possible. But I think I was fortunate in that company. There were some colleagues who, coincidentally, one had actually lived in Ostrava. And, you know, we talk about stories of being in Central Europe, the funny things, like when you when you have to wash your clothes for the first time without a dryer. And, you know, her experience was where she, you know, it was winter, and she washed her clothes, put them on a hanger out in her balcony, and when she came back, they were frozen, you know. These are not things that you deal with in Texas, especially. But I say that now, past week, that, you know, that changed. But, you know, we have dryers. We have things like that. Obviously, in Central Europe, especially at the time, there were no dryers. But these are cultural shocks that you experience going away. These are funny stories when you get back. And if you have, I was lucky that I had the colleagues that had experienced the same thing. There are other colleagues who also traveled to Germany, to the Middle East. So that I was not the only one who came back and had to deal with this sort of day-to-day, 9-to-5 desk job. So again, I think maybe I was lucky in that aspect, but at the same time, the overall experience of having that, you know, really having to readjust into a corporate life was extremely tough.
How long did it take you to fully adjust?
I think it took about 10 years. To tell you the truth, I actually never adjusted. And so, you know, I had a bachelor's degree, and my wife had a baccalaureate, which is a 3-year degree from Slovakia. And we wanted to advance our education. And so we found maybe this is a good opportunity to go back to school. Of course, money was an issue, and we didn't want to become full-time students in the U.S. So I was looking around at, you know, programs abroad. And I did find a school. It's an American school in Mexico City. And we decided, I'm going to go get my master's. She'll finish out her American bachelor's down there. We can afford it. We can be full-time students. And we get out of the U.S., but more importantly, out of Dallas, and can experience a whole new culture.
Circling back a little bit to the Peace Corps, if a young 25-year-old or recent graduate approaches you for advice in regards to joining the Peace Corps, what would you tell them?
I would start with the motto, it's the greatest job you'll ever love. And this isn't actually a hypothetical. I've recruited, informally recruited several friends to go. When I tell them my experience from the financial aspect, where, you know, once you hop on that plane, the U.S. government actually takes care of you. You know, they pay for your flight out there. They pay, they support you while you're there, and even give you a bit of money for readjustment when you come back. And then, of course, the experience is different for everybody. But the experience that you will have is something you will never forget, and it will change your life. It really will. Just as an example, a friend that I knew in Prague, you know how it is when you go out for a beer, it's never one beer. And so probably about a gallon of beer later, I talked him into joining the Peace Corps. When he returned home, he talked to the recruiter and ultimately ended up in Armenia for 2 years. and also found his wife. So I guess that's another joke, is that it's one of the best dating sites ever.
Better than Tinder, I guess. Well, you shouldn't be in finance. You should be in sales.
Yeah, well, I can only sell something I'm passionate about.
How did you end up in Prague?
So after our education finished in Mexico City, and we were looking at certain areas, Austin, Texas, we were looking at California, and of course, going back to Europe. And then at this point, we were also, you know, getting to a point in our lives where we did want to start the family, and we needed to actually continue with our careers. Like, you know, it's not something that we could do, go back and become a volunteer. So we picked Prague. She's Slovak. There's, a lot of Slovaks there. With her EU passport, it was a non-issue for me to live and work there as well. You know, all the little things, contracts, you know, finding a place to live, all that stuff, the language barrier was not an issue. So we decided on Prague. And then also, you know, of course, more research. There's a lot of there were a lot of corporations there, international corporations that were very relevant to what both of us do. So we felt that we had a much better opportunity or chance, you know, to continue our careers.
And yet you returned once again to the United States. Was it easier to do that transition the second time?
Yes, because so we had lived in Prague for, I think, four to five years. When we finally left, that was 2010. So, you know, the recession or the crisis or however you want to phrase it. And so we had a baby on the way. I had lost my job. I was laid off. And so I found this opportunity through, you know, through my network in the Bay Area in San Francisco. Now, there was no reverse culture shock in this case. First of all, the Bay Area is entirely different than Dallas from, I guess, from the politics, from the people who live there, from, you know, also the just the weather, the terrain, the fact that you're near the ocean. Everything is different than Dallas. So in many ways, it felt like we were going to almost another country, not the U.S., but just another country. So the job itself was much more flexible. For an IT company. There was a lot of flexibility, a lot more remote work. Even my drive to work was gorgeous. You know, I crossed the Dumbarton Bridge, crossing the bay. I see the mountains. I see the water. My office was on the water. I could walk out, and 2 minutes later, I'm standing on the bay. It was a really nice experience coming back. Not to mention, you know, when we go up, everybody around us usually came from somewhere else. You know, you go to the store and I could hear Polish, I could hear Czech, I could hear Slovak. It's like, wow, I'm so far away, yet I feel like I'm still there. And in fact, many of our friends that we made there were from Central Europe. You know, you go up to San Francisco and you hear languages from all over the world. And so it's like, it was not that same reverse culture shock. Plus in 2010, 2011, you know, of course we had different issues in the world, but it had nothing to do with war specifically or, you know, major politics when it came to sort of, you know, that terrorist aspect or revenge or, you know, however you want to call it. It was just not the same. And we were happy where we were. Not to mention we had a child on the way. So, or actually he was born by that time. And so we had something else to focus on.
I would imagine that having lived in Slovakia made it easier with the cultural differences with your wife. But can you describe a little bit the dynamics in your home? Your son is obviously Slovak American. How present is the Slovak culture in your house?
Well, it's not as Slovak as I would like. we've definitely become much more Americanized. You know, we don't speak Slovak as much as we like. I still retain it. My wife and I will speak occasionally, I want to say around 10%. Our son only knows some of the brief statements, you know, brief commentary, but it's mostly passive. So again, we sort of adapted back to the American culture. I think part of the reason for that is, and compared to 10 years prior going to Dallas, was that when we went to Dallas, I never felt like I could go back. I had no idea when we could go back to Slovakia. A lot of it was the money, just the time, et cetera. You know, we just didn't know. When we moved to California, we had already been back and forth multiple times. We knew, you know, that we can go to Slovakia almost anytime we want. And we did start doing that pretty much annually. So sometimes even multiple times a year. So it was not as, I guess, fearful in our sense or not. We were not as disconnected as we were before.
Every time you would go back, what are your favorite places in Slovakia besides your wife's hometown? And what are your favorite dishes?
So we do mostly hang out where her family is. So my wife is from a town called Levice. And then we also go up to an area called Žilina, which she has family there as well. So when we do go, it's really a whirlwind trip to visit everybody. Now, as far as food goes, most people may disagree with me, but I love halushki. It's, the Slovak halushki, Brenzova halushki with sheep cheese. It's really just, dumplings, cheese, and bacon. But it is so filling, and when it's homemade, it's fantastic. A lot of the other Slovak foods, my mother-in-law would find, she'd go mushroom picking and then pickle those mushrooms. And not a whole lot of people like this, but wow, I absolutely loved them.
Certainly, mushroom picking is also a national pastime here in the Czech Republic. And it's really funny, well, really interesting that children at a young age, they learn how to differentiate them and see which ones are poisonous, which ones are edible, and so forth. My kids know it already. They have their little book, and I don't know. It's quite nice.
It's a great experience to have with the family. I remember going with my wife and her family mushroom picking. Of course, I had no idea what to look for. I kept thinking everything was going to kill us. But
or make you hallucinate.
or make you hallucinate. Yeah, I get the special mushrooms. But again, yeah, my mother-in-law knew exactly what was good, and I started looking for the prime mushrooms. I just call them the veľmi dobre champignoni.
What kind of advice would you give to not just Americans, but people who want to become expats in other countries, post-COVID, of course?
So if it's not something that is planned for you, so if you decide that you could afford to retire or that you want to just go and have a sabbatical for a year, something like that, main thing is to plan, of course. You need to know a bit of the language. You need to know your immigration status. You need to know how much you could afford when you're out there. Other than that, one of my favorite sayings, especially I tell my son this, is really don't have any expectations. Because if you have your expectations are too high when you go overseas, you may be disappointed. But if they're too low and you start developing seen all the time as this annoying American ego, where you feel like you're better than everyone else, which is not the case, and absolutely not the truth. So if you just kind of go with no expectations and sort of that let's see what happens attitude, it just absolutely becomes amazing. It's always an amazing experience. Doesn't matter where you are, even bad situations. When you look back, you're like, hey, that was kind of cool. It's like, yeah, we made it through, and now we're better for it. There were so many nights when I was stuck waiting for a train in the freezing cold. And, I hated it at the time, but now looking back, it's like, wow, sometimes I actually reminisce about those experiences.
Certainly Central Europe is a safe place. So you probably didn't have to worry about getting mugged or anything in the middle of the night waiting for
not
a train.
All. Not at all. I felt safer in Slovakia at 1 or 2 a.m. in the middle of town than I would have in Dallas, for example.
So now you're in Phoenix. What took you there? And is that your final stop, or do you see yourself living somewhere else in the U.S. or the world?
Well, I could tell you right off the bat, it's not our final stop. I don't think we will ever have a final stop till the final day. But we moved, nowadays, we have a new experience to deal with COVID. And so just about a year ago, when schools closed, work went remote, we decided, hey, what are we doing up here? Everything is the same down in Phoenix. Now, there's a bit of a backstory. My father passed away 10 years ago. My mother passed away last year or in 2019, just before COVID hit. And so, she had a house available, which, we inherited. And we had to make a decision. We got to sell the house, rent it out. We also had all her stuff to deal with. And so that kind of said, hey, why don't we just move into mom's house? Everything is the exact same as it was in the Bay Area. We can't go out. We can't do anything. Plus, we have family here. And then it's a new area. Arizona is a desert, a lot of gorgeous mountains. We have the Grand Canyon, Horseshoe Bend, a lot of gorgeous areas not that far away that we could travel to. It's, mostly remote, so we don't have to worry too much about COVID. And so we could still do stuff. We could still enjoy our lives here. There's things that we miss, our friends, of course, up in the Bay Area, but hey, we're close to family now.
Keith, I just want to thank you for sharing your experiences and your time as well. I do hope that you and your family remain safe. And is there anything you'd like to tell the audience before we say goodbye?
Well, thank you, Rodrigo, for having me on. And one last thing I'd love to say is that there's no fear in traveling, that, nobody should be afraid of getting on a plane or getting in a car and going somewhere and experiencing something new, new cultures, new food, new environment, new everything. It is just such a wonderful experience. And if you keep your mind open, you will get more out of it than than you could ever possibly contribute.
Fantastic, Keith. Thanks. Thank you very much. All the best to you.
All right, you too, Rodrigo.
Thank you once again for listening, and I hope you'll join me in the next episode. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate the show, and leave your comments. If you want to write to me, my address is inbetweenexpats@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just type @inbetweenexpats. Until next time, take care.